Welcome back to the Heartland Pod. My name is Adam Summer, and I am your host. This is the pod for July 12th, 2022. It's a Tuesday. That means it's a Let's Have a Chat edition of the podcast. And I have today for you Mika Solner. Mika is a reporter with the Washington Times out of D.C. She covers Congress, and we had a really, really good chat. She's done some writing about some Missouri stuff, and she's a Mizzou J school grad, and so she's got an interest back here in Missouri. She's from the St. Louis area originally, so some stuff is catching her eye out here, and she's been writing about it. She wrote about Josh Hawley, and that caught my eye. Longtime listeners of this show, you've put two and two together already, and you know what we're getting into here. But really good conversation with Mika, and very much enjoyed it. So her chat is coming up here right after this little reminder about where to find us and how to connect with us. You can find all of our shows across the podcast spectrum. We're on Apple and Spotify and Google and pretty much everywhere else you can find a podcast. We are on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod on Twitter, and Facebook and Instagram, The Heartland Pod. You can find us by searching those as well. You can go to our website, heartlandpod.com. There's a link in the show notes for this show. And right there, you can find a link to our shows in other format. You can also find a link to our Patreon page. So if you like what we're doing here, if you want to support what we're doing, you can go to our Patreon and sign up. As a reminder, we just had our 2-year anniversary. That was yesterday. We've opened up a new Patreon level, a $2 level. It's a monthly Patreon subscription to just support what we're doing here. We're trying to change the conversation in politics, not just around Missouri, but broader than that, focusing on the heartland and working outward from there. And we would appreciate your support. It just, none of us are making money on the show. I say this a lot, but it's true. This is a very simple passion project for us, a side project, something that we do when we can and as much as we can because we believe in the work that we're doing. And so if you want to support it, thank you very much for doing so. You can do that on Patreon. And to all of you who subscribe over there already, we will never be able to say thank you enough. It has made such a difference in what we can do and bring you, and we really appreciate that. All right, let's get to my chat here with Mika Solner. And if you're new to the show, welcome in for this chat, and I hope you'll check out everything we do. We have shows Monday through Friday. We have different flavors of shows all week long, a big analysis show on Monday, and a nice flyover view news roundup on Fridays with Kevin Smith to round out the week, and a bunch of stuff different in between there. So 5 days a week, check us out. Here's the chat with Mika Solner. Let's have a chat. All right, we're here for a chat, and I have got with me Mika Solner. And Mika is a congressional reporter with the Washington Times. It says in her Twitter bio that she's covering the House with a focus on Dems. But the reason that I found her is because she wrote a piece about none other than Josh Hawley, Virginia, Missouri's own Josh Hawley. And I read it, and then I saw that she had written other things, and then I read her Washington Times blurb, and I found that she's got some Missouri connections, and so I thought that would be a very interesting person to have a chat with. So, Mika, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for joining me here on the Heartland Pod to have a chat.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So let's do kind of the basics here. You're in D.C. working for the Washington Times. You're a Mizzou J school graduate. How do you go from Mizzou J school graduate to Washington, D.C. doing what you're doing right now?
Well, I got my start in local media. So I moved to Wisconsin after graduating from Mizzou. So didn't make too much of a leap, and then covered local government, moved on to the 2020 election in a swing state, which was, they've got some really interesting politics there. And then I,
yes, they do.
Yeah. A little bit, less predictable than Missouri elections, mm-hmm, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then I took a job in D.C. starting on breaking news, and then now I'm covering Congress for the Washington Times. So, it's just kind of been this like nice trajectory, which isn't always the case in journalism, but it's been nice that I haven't had too much, wishy-washiness.
Yeah. So what does it feel like difference-wise going from a state house to federal? Like, is it way different, or is it just like kind of I don't know. Is it just like a more distilled version of the same thing?
Yeah, I would just say that it's just a larger scale of like local and state government. I mean, I've covered local, state, and obviously now federal government, but I just think it's a different level of, I guess, bureaucracy and efficiency, but also, you know, there's more pettiness sometimes at the national level.
Sure.
So, and it's a lot more politics than I think in, you know, like compared to smaller governments where things are actually getting done more quickly a lot of the times, so particularly in local government, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is how I know that you haven't been around Missouri recently, because you would know that the state government in Missouri actually gets less done than the federal government right now, which is impressive. It's hard to do, but they're pulling it off, and you gotta give them credit for that. So the Washington Times is interesting to me because for folks who don't, and I suspect there's some listeners who are not familiar with the Washington Times, it's got an interesting history. Were you aware of its history when you took a job there?
Yeah, I look into the news organizations that I consider working for.
I would imagine part of that is not necessarily objectionable. I mean, I noticed I was just kind of, you know, snooping on your Twitter, and you are talking about reconnecting with your Japanese heritage. And the Washington Times, of course, has sort of this background that I don't think, you know, it's not like you don't look at it and go, oh, this has got a Japanese and Korean heritage to it that, you know, is a big history of this paper. But like, it's there. It's just you got to kind of do your research on it. Was that something that drove you to it, or was that just sort of a happy connection?
Oh, no. So the piece I wrote on my Japanese heritage was for Washington Post, actually.
Right. But yeah, I noticed it was for the Post. I just was curious if there was just like a nice bonus, basically, about the way the Washington Times sort of has that connection.
No, not particularly, I would say. I think the opportunity was there to, you know, be on the Hill and cover Congress. So that's, you know, that's the main draw of cool. Why I'm here.
Yeah, I was just curious because I was doing both research and I was like, well, that's interesting. I wonder, you know, just sort of like maybe there's something there. So I want to get to Josh Hawley in a second, but you also, you know, again, back to I don't think everybody knows about the Washington Times, just because it's not like it's not in your face as much, I think, unless you're really a political dork like I am. So, you know, I think the Washington Times has been historically very conservative. It seems to still sort of go more that direction. But how would you describe what you're trying, you know, what you're doing there?
Yeah, so I would consider like my role is obviously to cater to our audience, but also introduce new voices to our readership. So, you know, we like to cover stories that might not be covered in other places or might do well with maybe a more conservative audience. But, you know, my goal is also to elevate progressive voices and the voices of Democrats who don't always get the spotlight in conservative media, unless it's about, you know, Democrat on Democrat attacks or et cetera. So I like to make connections on people doing really interesting things. For example, there is this new caucus that's looking into Black innovation, and that's by Stacey Plaskett, I believe. She's a representative from the Virgin Islands. And then Richie Torres, I believe, is also spearheading that. And I didn't see too much coverage of that elsewhere either. So I think there's a lot you can do with the beat because I have such a broad area of coverage. So that's really my goal, is to give people a little bit of both.
Yeah. I read your piece on the Kavanaugh restaurant debacle and, you know, AOC tweeting about it. And I liked the last line of it that you have is Politico reported that the justice was able to eat a full meal but left the establishment before dessert. And it's because if you read the first half of the article, there's a little jab at AOC. There's a little jab at her tweets. There's the, you know, the New York Democrat and like that. But then the last line. So I was like, as a whole, I have trouble sort of categorizing the way you wrote it, because I think you could, if you wanted to find, you know, some type of slant to it, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, I think you could, which to me means it's probably pretty good writing if you could find either, you know, if you can find whatever you want from it and it doesn't scream at you, here's my point.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's, you know, as a journalist, and I've worked for a variety and written for a variety of publications across the political spectrum. And then, so I think it's important just to hold everybody to account and you know, just report news as fairly as you can. And I know that definition has changed over the years, especially in recent years, as things have become quite polarized.
Yeah. So why does Josh Hawley draw your eye? Because you've written, like you said, you have a variety of pieces. You know, if you go to the WashingtonTimes.com and click on your name, search for your name, which I'll have a link in the show notes for folks. You know, it lays out all the pieces you've written, and you write a variety of different things, but you've got a couple of different Hawley pieces. So why does he draw your eye?
So I think Josh Hawley is really interesting. And I guess side note, I mean, my Missouri connections, I followed him from when he was running for attorney general to now being in the Senate.
Sure.
But I think he's really tapped into this notion, not just in Missouri, but across the Midwest and elsewhere, about these frustrations that people have. And so speaking with kind of the, you know, Republican voters in Missouri and other states, there's a lot of frustration within the Republican Party. And so there's a lot of people that support, are very strong supporters of Hawley. I've never talked to many people who are on the fence about him. I think you either kind of love him or hate him, depending, and it's very on party lines. But I think that they see him as someone who kind of sticks to these like very conservative ideals, is very socially conservative, and also has, he has a lot of religious convictions as well, given his background, litigating religious liberty and things like that. And I think that that kind of those cultural aspects really appeal to people. And I don't see too many other people really like reaching that in the same way that he has. So I do think that he's got a really interesting place in the Senate, especially also kind of given his background. You know, Ivy League educated. He's got a very unique upbringing that's very different from his constituents. And I know that's the case for a lot of members of Congress, but I think him in particular, tapping into these populist frustrations, is very interesting.
So you talk about him with a pretty deep knowledge of that. Do you see his, you know, you say his upbringing. So I'm in Warrensburg, Missouri. Josh claims Lexington to a point. Most of the folks around here know he didn't live there very long, and he went to a private high school in Kansas City before he went to Ivy League schools on the coast, and then clerked and became a law professor and then was an elected official. So is that something that you – is that the kind of thing that folks around DC sort of think of Josh as, this small town guy?
Oh, no. I mean, I wouldn't characterize that as the case. But I do think that he, you know, beyond him and just kind of this phenomenon of people who have these very starkly different backgrounds from the people that they appeal to. I mean, if you look at Donald Trump, he's a billionaire who's you know, appealed to a whole lot of, you know, white working class voters and this broad right. electorate. So I think it's not just him, but I mean, you see it with Ron DeSantis too. And there's a lot of people, both in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party too, who are making a lot of strong appeals, but I see it more in the GOP. And so, I don't know, I think Hawley in DC, he has a very unique way of kind of towing the line between like the Trump Republican, but also being respected kind of by like the McConnell side, because maybe, you know, I think he's very policy oriented on a lot of things, and typically is a very good vote for the Republicans. So yeah, he's got an interesting place.
Is it different him and Ted Cruz? Because I think a lot of folks who follow politics, but maybe aren't right. Again, back to that nitty gritty thing, right? You follow it along, but you sort of stop at the water's edge. Would say Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, almost as like a, you know, like an amalgam, like a blob. Is that sort of how you feel it in DC, or is there a pretty stark distinction between the two? Because I would have to imagine that even though they both have a ton of stuff in common, that they're both probably working to create a distinction between one another.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley get lumped in together a lot, particularly after January 6th and, you know, their objections to the election. But, you know, I think one comparison I've heard made is that, you know, Ted Cruz has a more casual way of speaking, whereas, you know, Hawley might come across as a little bit more academic. So that's one distinction that I hear.
That's really funny.
Yeah, but I do know.
I like the idea of Ted Cruz as casual. Like, that's
he's,
really funny.
He definitely has a fiery presence if you've seen him speak. And I don't, I wouldn't say like Holly isn't fiery, but he's definitely a little bit more.
He's certainly more intentionally reserved.
Yes. Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. But they do share a lot of those same issues in terms of like culture war, big tech, and some of these key areas that are, very popular among conservative circles.
So the big tech thing, that's, we talk about it some on this show. My co-host, Rachel, worked in LA for several years, and she sort of shoves the tech into our Slack feed, and it's great. I've learned a ton from her about sort of that world. Is that something that you're getting the sense that, bipartisanship is this weird word that means different things to everybody who says it, I think now. But it seems like there's an avenue on tech with Hawley and Klobuchar and Cruz, and like there's Democrats and Republicans, and they all kind of see the same thing, which is, okay, today big tech was good for me, but tomorrow big tech could be good for you. And either way you slice it, they have too much power. Is that a vibe you're getting in your coverage?
Yeah, tech is definitely like the one issue that you think lawmakers could come together. But now, because of how partisan everything has become, I think that there was some basis for bipartisanship among some of those senators that you just named. But, I think, there's been some lawmakers that have said they don't want to work with Hawley after January 6th. They don't want to work with Cruz or like certain people because of various actions. So I think there's less hope for that now. But, big tech is interesting because I think everybody agrees that as a conglomerate, there's too much power and influence in Silicon Valley and the way that it affects particularly youth, but everybody. And I think, there's a lot of investigations and studies on that they're ongoing. But it is interesting to see what kind of issues come at the forefront of each party, with obviously Republicans really zeroing in on their claims of censorship, but more than kind of the other areas a lot of the times.
So is Hawley the only thing that you focus on in the Missouri world? Is that just sort of a happenstance thing because of your connection to Mizzou, or is there more than that?
No, I've been following a lot of the Missouri delegation and then the Senate race as well. But I'm also looking at some of these House races. I know that there's, there's been a little bit of a rise in progressive candidates popping up. So I talked to, House candidate Ray Reed and then Lucas Coons, who's running for Senate. I think Lucas is really interesting, particularly because I think he can be compared to Hawley in some ways, like
in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yeah. Except he's kind of, he's considered, I think I've described him in my reporting as a populist of the left. And so the way he's kind of trying to appeal to these same people is, fascinating. And he's also got big tech too, as one of his big issues.
I've described him on this show as Jason, great value, Jason Kander. he's got some differences from Jason, but sort of trying to ride the same vibe, so to speak, toward where he's trying to go. It is interesting because I talked to a lot of folks, not just on the show, but behind the scenes about those races, because we cover them a ton. We're recording this Monday night on the 11th. Today's show, we did an entire block on just the Missouri Senate race, both the Republican and the Democratic side, because it's completely fascinating. Because on the Republican side, it's kind of batshit insane, and on the Republican or on the Democratic side, we've got these two or three really solid candidates, maybe even four, like really just good people that seem to be running, and then Trudy Bush Valentine sort of drops in from the sky, and there's this whole weird thing going on. Meanwhile, we got the two Erics trying to figure out which weapon is bigger, on the other side. So it's a pretty wild ride. Does the Kuntz factor and the, this Senate race, is that something that you're talking about in, when you talk about politics with folks in DC, is this Missouri Senate race actually on the radar? Or is that just you kind of as like a pet thing?
I think people are really interested in the Republican side, but I've mentioned, Lucas a few times to people, just because I do think that he is under, there's been, he's under, he's not as well known, I think, on the national level. And I know mm-hmm. he's, they're working on that, but
He does a ton of national media. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he's like really getting his name out there, but in terms of being contender in a very conservative state, I think it's, that's like the biggest challenge there. But yeah, I've seen him on TV. The Republican side is very interesting. And I know you named the two Erics, but mm-hmm. I think we can't forget Mark McCloskey as well.
Yeah.
I think he's still in
the... We can.
yeah, he's always a... I'm kind of surprised that he's still in the race. But yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, what else is he going to do, I guess, at this point? But what about... So John Wood... excuse me, not John Wood. Yeah, John Wood. John Wood. Has jumped into the race. We've got this independent now. Have you heard about this? Have you seen this?
I don't think I'm familiar with him.
Yeah, this guy. And let me make sure that I'm getting the name right here. Yeah, John Wood. Okay. So he's a lawyer. He was a Thomas clerk. And he was a lawyer who was a U.S. attorney and has most recently was working on the January 6th team and resigned to run for Senate as an independent in Missouri, but has said he will caucus with and support McConnell for Senate leadership. It's a very interesting little twist. That'll be something to check out, I think.
Yeah, that's the issue with independents, though, is that you know they caucus with one party or the other. So you can argue the same thing about Bernie Sanders and
oh, yeah.
Angus King, but you know they're pretty much Democrats.
Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because it just happened. So how that shakes things up and you know, does it give somebody a chance that, you know, is suddenly if Lucas gets the nomination, now we've got this independent who said, I'll support Mitch McConnell. And meanwhile, if Eric Greitens gets the nomination, who's basically said, send me to the Senate. Now, I think he literally said, no, it was Lucas. So I get confused sometimes whether it was Lucas or Greitens that said, send me to the Senate and I'll be a grenade or I'll, you know, whatever. So that'll be an interesting dynamic to watch for sure. You mentioned Ray Reed. Have you looked at that Missouri second at all?
I've looked at that one a bit, and I've had conversations with Congresswoman Wagner on the Hill, and you know, I think she's gonna be kind of a tough one to beat just because she has been ingrained in that district for a while, and I know it still tilts red, but it's interesting to kind of see this enthusiasm coming out of these younger candidates running on these very progressive visions. And I know that generation in particular is a lot more liberal and, you know, has really kind of fostered that. But they're also very heavy on activism. And I think they're more active than previous generations that, you know, have struggled to bring out the youth vote at ballot boxes. So it's very unique and interesting to see this generation that's been galvanized by their political upbringing.
You say this generation. Are you in that generation?
I'm not. I think I'm the cusp of millennial.
Okay. So okay.
I'm not a Gen Zer. I'm not as cool as them. And I am on TikTok, but other than that, no.
I think that might qualify you as a Gen Zer. If you're not running for office, but you also have a TikTok, you're either a millennial mom or a Gen Zer. Because I'm right in that like meaty part of the millennial generation. I'm a 1985 kid. So I'm like right in that just like, bam, I don't have a choice. I'm a millennial. I don't even get to argue one way or the other. So are you seeing that more and more? Like, you know, is that something that is coming up in conversation? And I keep saying in DC, just, I mean, you're physically in DC. I assume you're getting conversations that are maybe a little more, you know, we try to cover things on this show. We call it a middle out approach. So we kind of go, let's start in Missouri and let's work our way outward from there. I imagine in DC, most of the conversations are very much macro, beginning and come down to the micro. Is the Gen Z thing bubbling up there?
I think so. I've seen a lot of more coverage on it. I think NPR just did a big story on you know, the rise of these.
Ray was in that story.
Ray was in that story. And I do think that, you know, even looking a couple years older, there's just a lot of movement too, and a lot of people that are getting traction by people in office now, you know, who might be kind of in the more activist wing of the Democratic Party, you know, and so you see people like AOC and such kind of promoting people. Mm-hmm. you know, kind of the next generation of Congress and the political world. So, yeah, it's fascinating. And, you know, I wish them the best. And I think that's great that people are, that they're getting involved like this.
I get the sense that, and you're, you know, you're around these folks to kind of see them firsthand. I almost get the sense that we're about to have Congress almost like dropping 5G cell phones, right, in like sub-Saharan Africa, where there might not be a computer for 10 miles, right, that we're going to technologically leapfrog, where we're going to go from an 89-year-old majority leader to 40-year-olds, like that. Like, it's just going to happen almost. I don't know. I just have this sense that there's not a lot of meaty middle. Like, it's just going to jump.
I think that's what the younger members are hoping for. Yeah, we've seen that struggle sure. play out a lot. I mean, you see the argument made with House leadership now and them aging out, and look, they're looking to the next generation who's going to replace Pelosi and Hoyer and all those guys. And they're looking at like Hakeem Jeffries and, you know, a lot of these younger leaders of the Democratic Party. And that's going to be a big feat for whoever does kind of succeed. In these very established politicians.
What about the 2024 chatter? I've got to think, I mean, we hear it a ton here on the ground where there's a ton of stuff going on other than who is or isn't the president. But I imagine in D.C., the Biden 2024, is he, isn't he, is like, can you make it through a day without having that conversation? Is it possible?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely chatter about, you know, Biden's prospects, but I'm hearing, I think the more chatter is whether Trump is going to run. And I think that's become focused and front and center again amidst these January 6th hearings. It's like, how are these hearings going to impact if he runs? Like, it's always, oh, if he runs, Trump teases 2024. So I think it's going to be, you know, it's hard to say. I guess you never know with what he's going to do. But so I do hear a lot more talk on that. But obviously people are always interested in, you know, Biden's next move too.
I have a hard time buying that Trump's going to run if he hasn't already declared it. Like, I don't know why, you know, if you're going to run in 2024 and if you're Donald Trump, why would you be even coy about it at this point? Why wouldn't you just do it? Why wouldn't you just start running right now openly?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's very unpredictable and probably most likely intentional in terms of just kind of waiting it out. So I know that there's a lot of people who have openly said that they think he's going to run. You know, there's lawmakers that have said that they're pretty confident. And then there's obviously like a lot of chatter about it. But then there's a lot of speculation on who else might. So obviously DeSantis is a favorite. And in polling, Josh Hawley was polled too at CPAC. And then Mike Pence and Ted Cruz and kind of all the main players.
Sure, sure. What you wrote about it. What do you make of Trump attending former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's funeral?
So I think he's still in talks about attending his funeral. But I mean, the two had a close relationship, I think, and it. I think Trump said that he was the first world leader that he met with when he was president. So that's significant, but I think they've always kind of, you know, done well for US-Japanese relations. But it would be, you know, if Trump goes, then I think that might pressure Biden to attend too. But who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? But, you know, it's a crazy, crazy thing.
Yeah. So, I'm going to do a little segment here with you to close it out. It's the favorite things. So question one on the favorite things. What is your favorite thing about being a journalist in D.C.? I mean, I feel like it could be a million answers there. But what's the one thing that you're just like, man, this just makes it worth it?
I think my favorite thing is just kind of getting to know people, you know, the people you see on TV on a personal level. So just kind of having a regular interaction with a lawmaker and being like, wow, they're like a normal person that also struggles with their dishwasher or like just doesn't like, or is like running late. I think that's like the most interesting thing is kind of seeing people beyond their talking points. And I think that's kind of given me like a new level of, I don't know, like I don't want to use the word admiration, but like kind of maybe like fascination with people. And just kind of, I guess the curtain has come down.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. They're just people. They're just people. All right. Number two, you are a Mizzou J school grad.
MIZU.
ZOU. Absolutely. So pizza, let's talk pizza, because there's an answer that people would say it's supposed to be, but I think there are other answers to this question around Columbia. What you're back in town. You got a couple of nights. You got one chance to get some pizza. Where are you going?
Gumby's.
There it is. See? Yes. That's how you know. That's a real Mizzou right there. Give me some Gumby's. Shakespeare's, I like Shakespeare's. Don't get me wrong. Shakespeare's is very good pizza. But it's like the pizza that when your parents come in, you have to get, because like, or your roommate's parents, or like somebody's dad just wants Shakespeare. For me, it was my father-in-law. It was like every time he's got to have the Shakespeare's pepperoni pizza. I'm just like, that's fine. We can go to Shakespeare's. All right. It's good.
It's fine. Yeah. I would say it's fine. But Pizza Tree is also good. But Gumby's, hands down, I think, is the real winner of Columbia.
All right. Final thing, final favorite thing. What is the favorite story that you have written, whether it's a DC or not, the favorite thing that you've written?
Oh, that is a tough one.
I always save the hardest one for last.
Man, I've met a lot of cool people, and I've done a lot of stories.
I noticed you didn't jump out right away and say Josh Hawley.
I think that's too recent for me.
It wasn't getting deep background about Josh Hawley's house in Ozark, Missouri. That didn't do it for you.
Unfortunately. Okay. I got two that come to mind. Both of them, I was at a local paper, and they're very opposite ends of, okay. So I'll be fair. So I did one story on, the 10 year anniversary, or coming up on the 10 year anniversary of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And so I was talking to veterans who were discharged under that law and how they're trying to fight or like, get that off the record and kind of reclaim their, I'm sorry. The military jargon is not good, but
sure, they got to get rid of the dishonorable discharge so that they can get their benefits on the back end.
Discharge. Yeah. It's been a while since I've done that story.
Yeah, it unlocks a ton of benefits. That's important.
But that was really interesting to kind of unlock that history and speak with kind of the LGBTQ veterans and how the military has kind of changed around that culture, especially now you see. And this was during the Trump. I think after Trump just reinstated the transgender ban. So that was a really interesting story, and I got to meet a lot of unique, I got to talk to a lot of unique, but also very personal stories of people. And the other story I did, I like the story I did about the women behind the Trump campaign, or who were kind of fueling his grassroots efforts and trying to get, women to turn to Trump and vote for him. So that was interesting just because I don't think that, women who support Trump have gotten the best rep in the national media a lot of the time. So just kind of talking face value to people in terms of, why he appeals to them, despite a lot of the, narrative around him. And I think that was, to talk about the Access Hollywood tape and stuff like that. But, it's good to have just conversations. And I got a lot of good reception from them. And I think there were some people that said, that was the first time that they ever talked to a reporter. And so it was good to kind of build that trust. So I think those are the two that really stick out and are memorable stories for me.
Excellent. How hard is it? And I'll let you go here, but as you were coming up with that answer, you're like, well, I've got two and I'll be fair. How hard is it sometimes to maintain objectivity? Because like what we do here on the podcast, like we're not news reporters, right? I'm not a journalist. I'm a lawyer who's got a podcast, and I like to do analysis. And if I think somebody said something really stupid, I say, that was really stupid. And then I explain why I think it's really stupid. How hard is that part of the job where, sort of keeping the editorial comments to a low, murmur, so to speak, in the writing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is a difference between objectivity and fairness now. And I know a lot of journalists have made this argument. Personally, like, I don't find it as difficult because I think I just take what people say, whether it's someone on the far left or the far right or, whatever is going on. I know a lot of people have a personal stake, but I think that you just kind of have to, take yourself out of the story and look at, you know, this person is coming from this perspective, probably because of XYZ factors. They grew up like this, you know, this is how they shape their worldview. So it's not my worldview to judge, you know, that's somebody else's perspective. And this is how it's playing out now. And, you know, to someone, they might agree with that, they might not agree with that. But my job is just to kind of talk to people and get things at face value, and then just kind of, you know, be fair and make sure that I kind of discuss on both sides. So for me, that's my goal.
Well, Mika Solner, Washington Times, I appreciate your time here, and look forward to talking with you again. I think it's nice to get to talk to folks out in DC, and you know, helps us all have that perspective. And if you're ever in Missouri to cover something, let us know. We'd be happy to host you.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
The Heartland Pod is a production of Midmap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com. Online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.